From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Today, an update of news and events from Latin America and the Caribbean with our reporter from south of the border, Tony Solo, reporting from Managua, Nicaragua.
Well, we have yet another, I don't know, engineering project from the geniuses at Foggy Bottom and Langley and God knows what other think tanks they applied to the problem of Venezuela, where now all they need to do to make a random dude go away, this pretender, the person who's the only person in the world that thinks he's president of Venezuela, to make him go away, all they have to do is have Nicolas Maduro resign his office as president of Venezuela, and the pretender to the throne promises he'll go away too, although he does reserve the right to run for the office, and Maduro is condemned by Elliot Abrams to never being president of Venezuela again. The nerve of these people is amazing.
Yeah, from Venezuela's point of view, the problem is the United States, obviously.
Right.
And the antics of the State Department really do take your breath away, really. A few days ago, the United States authorities issued a $15 million bounty for Maduro, claiming that he's the head of a vast drugs dealing and drugs trading operation using the Venezuelan state to trade those drugs. And that's, you know, and the evidence that they offered was that Venezuela is this staging post for around 200 tons of cocaine every year. But what they don't tell you is that cocaine isn't produced in Venezuela, and the cocaine production is overwhelmingly from neighboring Colombia, and there's a very graphic map that has been circulating on the internet on all kinds of sites, and not just progressive sites, and it shows the pattern of drugs trading between South America and the United States, and it's overwhelmingly from Colombia,
right?
And so, you know, it's just absurd to claim that Venezuela is some kind of narco state when Colombia for decades has been a narco terror state occupied by the United States. The United States has something like 7 military bases in Colombia,
right?
But they still, Colombia is still the main site for the production and dispatch of cocaine to the United States.
Well, some note the fact that you have that huge military presence there and the huge cocaine trade with that country, and also the huge military presence of the U.S. in Afghanistan, and the huge trade in poppies and opium with that country, that the relationship is not adversarial, but rather either cooperative or one of principal and agent, in essence. You know, in South America, Colombia is not the only one with hands in the coca till. We're only looking, it's less than a year since the senior staff person for the president of Brazil got popped with 39 or 40 kilos of cocaine in his own hand baggage. It's like 80 pounds, 90 pounds.
Yeah, I don't know what the United States GDP would look like without the narcotics trade, but
right.
And Wall Street obviously does very nicely out of it.
Yes.
And a few years ago, the UN office that deals with drugs and tries to keep tabs on the development of the drugs industry throughout the world, and stated very clearly, and I think it's more than a few years ago, it was about 2 years or 3 years after the great financial crisis of 2008-2009, that UN office stated very clearly that the U.S. financial system would have collapsed without income from the drugs trade.
That's right.
It's the United Nations. So even the United Nations is very well aware of the realities of the international drugs trade, even though the United States authorities kind of try to pretend that the reverse of the truth is the case. So they, it's them that are the people that who are the biggest drugs consumers in the world, the United States, of course.
Right.
So, you know, and the problem isn't a relatively minor transit problem through Venezuela. The problem is the vast consumption of drugs in the United States.
That's right.
And the whole industry that has generated.
Right.
So, yep. Anyway, and there you have it, that ridiculous claim and the grotesque kind of wanted picture of Nicolas Maduro with a $15 million bounty on his head. And that's the level to which the U.S. State Department has sunk to. And now that they failed consistently for how long now? Ever since the death of Hugo Chavez, which is almost certainly an assassination by the U.S. authorities through the CIA. And you may or may not believe that. I certainly believe that Hugo Chavez Frias was assassinated by the United States authorities, because they thought that without Chavez, the Bolivarian Revolution would collapse.
Right.
Well, they were wrong. And Nicolas Maduro has proven to be a very worthy and dignified successor to Comandante Hugo Chavez. And he, too, with his team, the young foreign minister Jorge Arreaza, the Delcy Rodriguez, the vice president, Diosdado Cabello, the president of the constituent assembly there, and they run rings around the United States and made the United States look stupid. And every time the United States, in its frustration, intensifies sanctions or comes out with yet another plan to try and do away with a democratically elected government of Venezuela, led by President Nicolas Maduro Moro, and they fail. And they fail in the most pathetic way, and this is right. Just another example. This latest transition plan is just another example.
Right.
But what they've done, behind the scenes, of course, behind all these ridiculous bits of theatre that the U.S. State Department puts on for everybody every periodically, you have very sinister events going on, and among them assassination attempts, like the attempt to blow up the President Moro and some of his colleagues using drones and with explosive devices
right.
attached, and that failed back in whenever it was, 2018.
Right.
And now a plot has been revealed as a result of the completely inept handling by the U.S. State Department of their kind of proclamation against Nicolas Maduro. They foolishly included in that indictment a guy who was actually on their side, an ex Venezuelan army general called Alcala.
Right.
Once he saw that he was too was being targeted by people who he stupidly thought might be his friends, the U.S. State Department and CIA, he came out and immediately denounced on Colombian public media that Juan Guaido had been involved in a murder attempt, an assassination attempt, involving a very substantial shipment of arms that the Colombian authorities themselves uncovered, presumably by mistake. And Alcala said, well, that arms shipment was authorized by Guaido together with the U.S. authorities
right.
To be used in an assassination attempt against President Maduro.
Right.
No,
it's amazing because could you imagine... let's say that I'll do it for myself, just for entertainment value. Some of my friends decide here that I should be the next president of the United States because they would like to own everything that's currently publicly owned. And they figure he's just the guy to do it. We put him in. So they decide to hold the press conference with a few of their friends and the corporate media in attendance, and hook up with the services, security services and intel services of, say, Russia and China to back me up and spread this stuff around the rest of the world and say, well, Donald Trump is no longer the president of the United States. Don DeBar is. And we only recognize him. Then get a bunch of banks around the world to say, yeah, Don DeBar is now the president of the United States. So all those bank accounts, here's a withdrawal slip. And you know, et cetera, et cetera. And they've been running this circus now with this guy Guaido for almost 2 years. And they've stolen billions of dollars. Billions of dollars this way. And he doesn't control a single piece of real estate in that country whatsoever. I control more real estate than he does, just the house that I live in and the property around it. He doesn't have that. So he controls less of it, and the United States is bigger. So, you know, so he owns like nothing in a small country. I own next to nothing in a big country. And we both have the same, you know, value to our claim in terms of, boy, if you tried that stuff, the U.S. government would have somebody up here with 85 guns and bazookas and all kinds of stuff pointing at the windows of my little house saying, come on out with your hands up, so fast it would knock you out of your chair. And yet this guy's doing this in plain view and calling the president of Venezuela a dictator while he tries to take over the country illegally with the help of a foreign power.
Yeah, also with the involvement of Colombian drugs dealers, because the people that facilitated Guaido's transit from Venezuela to Colombia at the beginning of last year.
Right.
During the so-called Battle of the Bridges, when Guaido was trying to, when the United States were trying to use a humanitarian pretext to invade Venezuela.
Right.
And the people that facilitated his transit from Venezuela to Colombia were well-known U.S.-identified drugs dealers.
Well, when he came to the United States, okay? He came to the United States a couple months ago, right? He came to Congress and everything. And people were wondering, how did he get into the country, you know, unobserved? Easy. They smuggled him in a shipping container full of cocaine.
Very, very, very probably. Anyway, the thing about it is that these ridiculous antics by the United States Department of State, and currently under this odious, sinister buffoon Mike Pompeo.
Yeah, and Elliot Abrams and that whole thing.
They personify the collapse of any kind of sane approach in policy terms to what's going on in Latin America generally, and that's mirrored in what's happening domestically with the coronavirus.
Yes, it is.
Crisis. And people outside the United States can barely believe what they're seeing or reading about what's happening in the United States with the government's response or non-response to the crisis. And that's mirrored in just about every area of U.S. public policy, in particular foreign policy. Yep. And it's just completely demented. And it's based on ridiculous false beliefs that only people in the United States could begin to take seriously. And outside the United States, the great majority of people are well aware of what the reality is.
These are the ones that lecture the rest of the world about rule of law. You know, it's amazing because that's the thing that's supposedly the big advantage to Western culture that it brings to the world is this rule of law, the legitimacy of the legal institutions, and it's not even a comic book version of it. It's a total fantasy.
Yeah, no, and if you look at just to demonstrate the demented nature of U.S. foreign policy, they hold up Colombia as a model for the region. Now, Colombia is going through has been going through a human rights crisis for over 60 years now. That's continuing now.
Right.
And just yesterday, another demobilized ex-former FARC guerrilla fighter was murdered by death squads taking advantage of the quarantine currently being imposed in Colombia. And Colombia has something like 10 times more, almost 10 times more cases of the coronavirus than Venezuela. It got many more deaths from the coronavirus than Venezuela. But Venezuela is the country that's under economic and sanctions and all kinds of sanctions that are preventing it from accessing the inputs that it needs to address the COVID-19 virus crisis.
Right.
And Colombia is this model held up by the United States for everybody in Latin America to emulate.
Right.
And how ridiculous is that?
Ridiculous. Yep.
Never mind talking about Cuba. And look at the example of Cuba, this kind of radiant, brilliant, shining light in terms of humanity and solidarity throughout the world.
Yep.
But in particular in Latin America.
Yep.
And just look at what the United States has done. Cuba's sending brigades all over the world, Italy,
right. Yep.
To Nicaragua, to Venezuela, to other places as well. And very many countries, even the kind of supine, submissive accomplices to U.S. foreign policy in the European Union, countries like Germany and so on, have recognized the tremendous contribution that Cuba, this tiny island nation of 11 million people,
right,
has made to the humanity's struggle against this pandemic. And there are all kinds of arguments you can have around the coronavirus phenomenon. But I mean, for practical purposes, it is a very serious public health threat,
right?
And countries are having to deal with it. And what is the one country that has completely failed its people? The United States of America, the wealthiest country in the world. And contrast that with what the contribution that Cuba has made. There's no comparison.
Right.
And so, no, and this whole crisis. And somebody, I was talking to a friend from Boston today, a family psychologist, who was saying that she and all the people in her circle feel that the United States will never be the same again after this crisis. Well, let's hope it's never the same again in the best sense possible.
Right.
But that's by no means guaranteed. And from Latin America's point of view, people in Latin America basically are just, I think a lot of people have just given up on the United States. It's not a serious country, you know,
well,
in terms of in policy.
Right, the policy.
And this latest and either domestic policy, you have this huge financial giveaway, $2 trillion, most of which are going to, just as in 2008, 2009, this huge bailout, it's not going to the people of the United States, it's going to a handful of corporations.
Well, this time they are actually, they're writing us all checks too. That's a first. We're going to get checks, $800, $1,000, $1,200, stuff like that. The people in the country, poor, rich, etc. If you filed income tax returns or paid an income tax in one of the last couple of years, I forget how it's structured, you're going to get a check. Now, that is something different than the last time where we did not get a single check. So we get some
of our
money.
Well, maybe it's to keep the people in Washington.
Okay. Yeah, they're emptying out my bank account, and they're giving most of the money to these big corporations, but this time they're giving me back some of it. That's the difference. It's still not a good deal. It's my money. What?
From outside the U.S., it looks like a desperate measure to stop the mobs invading Washington.
Of course.
And what's happened locally in terms of responses to lockdowns is that there's growing protest in Honduras because the government hasn't made provision to ensure that people, that low-income people who are already having a very hard time, get access to food. And in El Salvador, President Bukele made the promise that everybody would get $300, right? So, but what happened yesterday was that a crowd of people turned up at one of the distribution centers, or the centers attending people associated with the problems generated by lockdown, and they were attacked by police with pepper gas and truncheons. Jeez. You know, in the United States, although that's been a headline, correct me if I'm wrong, but I understand that people will have to wait probably at least a couple of months before they get their $800, $1,000, $1,200 checks. Well, unless I'm mistaken, 50% of people in the United States don't even have $400 saved up for that, precisely that kind of emergency.
I think
how are they going to survive for 2 months while they wait for their checks?
I think even more than that. Yeah, I think that the percentage of people that don't have even $1,000 towards an emergency was somewhere in the vicinity of 70% or something, 75%. So, yeah, look, it's a terrible situation that's here, and the numbers, you know, are terrible also. And there's been, you know, this is a crisis that's been building for many years. They've defunded, they've been closing hospitals for 30 years here, in New York City, turning them into condominiums and God knows what else. And all across the country, refocusing money that was in the budget to take care of people that were sick, throwing it into R&D for exotic drugs that only a few people actually get the benefit of. That, you know, you're working on basically building two healthcare systems, one that keeps wealthy people healthy and alive for a very long time, that feeds on the rest of us, basically. And this is now, you know, we're seeing that displayed here because, well, we only needed five masks. There's only five billionaires. What do the rest of you all need masks for? kind of mentality in the entire system. And the doctors are saying, well, we thought we'd get some.
Right. So, yeah, and the coronavirus has really opened a lot of people's eyes in countries that were foolish enough to vote in right-wing governments. In Ecuador, there's currently some kind of scandal going on over the way the government's handling the crisis, the right-wing government of Lenin Moreno. And you remember last week we were saying, well, it'll be interesting to see how the different approaches pan out. Right. For example, between Argentina and Mexico, Mexico's been following the OPS guidelines, treating the current first phase they're in as a phase in which they hope to be able to prepare for a potential second phase if the virus continues to spread in a serious way among the general population. And so they're kind of on the border between the first phase and the second phase, which will involve much more restrictive measures like restricting movement of people, restricting shutting down some parts of the economy, some parts of the public sector. But in Argentina, they jumped to that very quickly. Yeah. The results don't seem to be that different. In fact, if you look at the figures if you look at the figures for Mexico and Argentina,
right.
And here in the region, and as I said last week, there's such a strong contrast between the situation in Nicaragua, where they too are dealing with the current situation as if it were the first phase, and apparently the World Health Organization identifies three, four phases. The first phase is a phase of prevention and education. The second phase is a phase of containment. And the third phase is a much more serious phase where you get into things like quarantine and so on. Yeah. But here in Nicaragua, we're still in the first phase. There hasn't been, there have been no cases of locally transmitted contamination from the virus. We currently have Three active cases. One person has been released from hospital, has recovered. Another person unfortunately died. So we have three cases, and all of those cases are people who arrived from the United States. Right. Two men in their 70s who arrived from the United States and developed symptoms, and a 52-year-old woman who arrived from the United States and developed symptoms. And there are also a total of 12 people that are currently in observation as a result of having been in contact with those three cases. And they so far have tested negative. So from our point of view here in Nicaragua, the authorities are behaving in a very appropriate way, sticking right. to the guidance and the protocols of the World Health Organization, and life in general is going on as normal. Although a large number of people are themselves taking it upon themselves to self-isolate, mainly middle class people who can afford to do so. But if you go to the markets, for example, the markets are full of people. And very few people are wearing masks, for example, because contrary to what some health experts, epidemiological experts in the United States have said, the World Health Organization has stated that the disease is not an airborne disease. Right. It doesn't hang in the air for right. hours at a time. It's communicated in the moisture and droplets that's right. that people emit when they're talking or coughing or sneezing, and the virus, according to the information that we've received from the World Health Organization via our authorities, the virus quite quickly drops to the floor, and so the main area, the main vector of transmission is people touching surfaces that have been contaminated from people sneezing or coughing or otherwise emitting the virus.
Right.
And that's why it's so important to wash your hands. And
right.
One of the things that is going to be a huge change in Nicaragua once this crisis dies down is the dramatic improvement in people's personal hygiene. Everybody's washing their hands every 20 minutes or
right.
so.
Yeah.
And so, you know, And that's in such a sharp contrast to what's happened in next door in El Salvador, and they went into quarantine almost straight away, and they've got over 30 cases of the virus, and luckily nobody died so far. But it'll be very instructive to see what happens over the next month or so here in the region,
right.
because I firmly believe that. And I read this in an article quite widely published over the weekend, and there's such a strong contrast between governments that are focused on the well-being of the human person among their populations,
right.
who in Venezuela, the revolutionary government in Venezuela, the revolutionary government in Cuba, revolutionary government, Sandinista government here in Nicaragua, they prioritize grassroots democracy, which is very different from the phony representative democracy of Western Europe and North America,
right.
where in fact those societies are essentially plutocracies.
Right.
So yeah, you can see this very strong contrast to what I was talking about earlier about Cuba. There's such a strong contrast between societies that are organized politically with the focus on the needs of the human person and societies that are organized around the need for needs of big business and corporate profit.
Yep.
And we're going to see that more and more as this crisis draws on.
That's
but whether lessons will be learned from that, who knows?
That's up to us, that part of it. And, you know, we are starting to see it already. And I guess we'll have to compare numbers again next week when we come back. We're out of time for this week. And see where it's been. Because last week over this week, or this week over last week, that trend does bear out. The countries that, the socialist-oriented countries, in essence, are doing much better in terms of prevention and in terms of the death rate, in any event, than the others, which indicates something. So thank you very much. We'll speak about it again next week.
I look forward to it, Tom. Thanks.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.